Hi, this is Christopher with Johnja.net. This interesting little film was brought to my attention, and I wanted to learn a little bit more about this. This is IPF Productions. I got the filmmakers with this. This is a movie called Rewind This, and it's all about, believe it or not, the VHS tape and how it affected, well, the way we watch movies. And I have the entire crew with me right now. Everyone, thanks very much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, howdy.
Now, just so listeners can kind of put names to the voices, would you guys mind introducing yourselves? And if you could, just kind of give us a brief rundown of what your history is in filmmaking.
I'm Josh Johnson, and my background is mostly in short films and music videos and writing, and this is the first feature film that I've worked on with this group and in general.
And this is Carolee Mitchell. I'm the producer on the film. I am a film fanatic as far as consumption of film, and I have worked on quite a few shorts and music videos as well.
And this is Christopher Palmer, and I do short documentaries and commercials professionally for the University of Texas at Austin. And this is my first feature film, but I love VHS, just like we all do.
A lot of us grew up with it. It's hard not to love. Now, it sounds like you got a pretty wide variety of backgrounds, of documentaries, music videos, and everything. What made you guys come together and do a feature film, this documentary on VHS? Because no offense, but you guys don't really even seem to be old enough to remember VHS in its heyday.
No, I think we were. Both Christopher and I are about the same age, and Carolee is fairly close to our age as well. And it was always a part of our childhood, I think, from the time that we were old enough to be aware of films and the ability to consume them, you know, and actually make choices about what we saw. So we were actually kind of the perfect age during the boom, where it really completely revolutionized our childhoods to a certain degree. But as far as how we came together, we were all friends for several years. We had met through film festivals and just being part of the local Austin film community, and collaborating on this film just kind of made sense in a weird way. We all wanted to be making feature films, and the opportunity to do it together just seemed right.
Now, Carolee, you were saying that you're the kind of the producer of this project. You guys had to get a little creative when it came to trying to finance the film. Did you have a little trouble getting people to plop their hard-earned cash on the what many would consider a bygone format?
We're telling, it's a broader story than just VHS. I mean, we're telling the story about, it's really about access to film. So before, it just happened, VHS happened to be the medium that in which the people started to be able to control their relationship with film. And as far as funding is, we're for the most part been self-funded up to a point. We've been working on the documentary for almost 2 years. Luckily, we have very talented friends. We own all of our own equipment. So most of our costs have just been travel up to this point. And to get through the last bit, which was going to be a little more expensive, our concluding trip is going to be Japan in May. We decided to start a Kickstarter campaign, and we were shocked and awed by the great response that we had. We actually met our goal within 112 hours of posting the Kickstarter campaign.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, it was very exciting.
So you said you're gonna finish this up and go into Japan. So what's the goal in Japan then?
In Japan, there's a few angles that we want to cover. The two main angles, though, are the introduction of the technology into the marketplace and the companies that created that. There were a lot of video machines prior to that, you know, starting back in the 50s and then coming up through the 70s. But at the end of the 70s in Japan, both JVC and Sony introduced VHS and Betamax on a massive scale into the marketplace. And even though they weren't the first to have the idea of home video technology, they were the first to really get it out there and have the impact that it's, you know, now we see in today's world. So we want to get that story, and then we also want to cover the direct-to-video market in Japan, which is really different than the Western equivalent. In the West, it's kind of the movie ghetto. Direct-to-video movies were perceived as being less than theatrical features, and it was always kind of a struggle to elevate yourself out of that world. Mm-hmm. In Japan, people move back and forth between them very fluidly, and the same studios would produce both direct-to-video and theatrical features, and they would have directors under contract that were doing both, and were very happy to be doing that. So we kind of want to get that different perspective as well.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that it was that different in Japan. It seems like overseas, you're right, we do have this sort of, you're either a movie star or you're a TV star. You either make big pictures or you make little pictures. And they're really, only just now do you start to see the lines getting blurred a little bit here in the States, whereas it seems over in Europe and I guess even in Japan, that's always been the case, or at least been the case for a lot longer.
Yeah, the concept of the blockbuster doesn't really exist in the same way in most other parts of the world. In fact, the blockbuster mentality seems to actually come from Hollywood. You know, most of the gigantic films that gross huge amounts are actually the same ones that are grossing that amount here. So the whole film culture is very different, especially in the East, where they don't have the same kind of gigantic stars because the industry is so small.
Now, you mentioned JVC and Sony. I remember the war between the Beta and the VHS, and you know, VHS ended up winning out. And I remember, was it just because that, was it Sony, what, were they the ones with the VHS?
Is that right? They had the Betamax, and JVC was the competitor.
Okay, JVC, I had it backwards. Didn't it just come down to one of them was willing to license out their technology to other manufacturers and the other not?
I think that was part of it, but there was also sort of which was cheaper, which had longer play, which was more, you know, readily available to, you know, and pornography did play a small role in picking up. I mean, there were porno tapes on Beta, but I think the inexpensive and the longer play format allowed the pornography industry to sort of adopt VHS, and I think that was sort of the tipping point. But it was sort of because of that I think Sony said they wanted to get into production, and they vowed really to never lose a format war again, which with Blu-ray, they didn't.
Right. I think that's going to be an interesting kind of eye-opening to a lot of people to find out that the reason they had the VHS is had a large part to do with the porn industry.
Yeah, and what's interesting is now when there was the most recent format war, it was really the first time where porn didn't factor in much. And I think the reason for that is because the internet has become the primary means by which people consume pornography. Mm-hmm. So they really didn't have any need to kowtow to any particular format because most of their revenue is no longer generated through physical media. They're kind of ahead of the wave. Now you're seeing physical media go away even for mainstream commercial films, but the porn industry has already been there for almost a decade.
Well, that's something, if you don't mind me getting your thoughts. What do you think about that? Are we seeing the end of the physical media, and do you think it'll be sooner rather than later?
Seems to be the direction that things are going. As a collector, it breaks my heart a little bit, so I'm going to live in denial and try to buy up everything I can in the meantime. But, I mean, people want access. They want things, quickly. A lot of people don't want to have collections. Luckily for us in Austin, we still have a few video stores that are kicking pretty strongly. But in most places in the country, that's not something that people have the ability to take advantage of.
Right.
So not really a soothsayer on that, but it seems to be a direction that things are going more digital.
And one of the subjects we're approaching is what that has done to artwork, and that, you know, with the smaller and smaller packaging, you see less and less artwork. There's less and less of a focus of the catchy visual stimulation stuff with the taglines. And with the digital, you just get sort of a thumbnail.
Right.
You know, it's sort of diminished that aspect of home video consumption.
I remember a very similar point being brought up when vinyl was fading away, and that the artwork that went into the sleeve of a vinyl record, and they looked at it as an actual art form that was being lost, because now everything's on the little, what is it, you know, 6x6 CD case. And now, like you said, it's CDs are almost passe, and we're down to MP3s, and they're just a thumbnail.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things to speculate about is whether or not there will be sort of a resurgence of that artwork based upon the notion that if physical media is more or less going away, and the only reason physical media will continue to exist is for the collector's market,
mm-hmm.
and maybe that artwork will come back because it's a niche market that's being appealed to, and there's no longer that same need to appeal to a mass audience.
Right.
So I'm kind of curious to see if artwork will return to that direction, since it's going to be catered to such a small group of people.
one of the first things that grabs your attention if you're just going through a store is what's on the cover.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned the video store. I mean, there's something. I remember, you know, the mom and pop video store was how it all started. There was usually a small store in a, you know, string of stores that you'd walk in that was literally smaller than some people's living rooms, with a couple, you know, VHS movies on the shelf. And then, of course, it blew into, you know, the Blockbusters and the Hollywood Video, or, you know, whatever maybe local name that went, kind of exploded. There's an experience that went along with going to the video store. And that is something that's been lost, and I think is sort of a shame.
Yeah, that ritual, that it was almost religious for me, I know. I mean, I would go every Friday, and, you know, it didn't matter if I had friends that I was going with or not. I would sort of just spend a couple hours and look through covers. And it was just that whole process. I felt so much more connected to what was out there, you know, old and new. It didn't really matter. I just loved going through and reading the backs and checking out the cool illustrated covers. You know, and once I got into the horror movies, it was just a whole new kind of, like, you know, what was most shocking? What brought me some nightmares? You know, what imagery could I not forget?
I actually used to work at a Blockbuster. And there was, like you said, people that would come in once a week, and you get to know them. You get to know what kind of movies they like. You could pull things aside. There was a real connection with the people that were coming in, and those people had a connection to you. And now, unless you consider, you know, going on Facebook or doing something like GetGlue, that's all lost. You're not going to find the same group gathering around the red box outside of the local grocery store.
Absolutely.
Every week. Yeah.
I think Twitter has become kind of my replacement for that, is you find the group of people that you really trust their tastes and their experiences, and start to see what they're watching to help aid in choice selections for in discovery of new film.
Yeah, the discovery right there, that does make it tough. Without the store, without being able to go in and just kind of scan through the shelf, you know, whether it's a rental store or a place of the purchase, without that, there really is. It's very difficult to find something new. I used to just go through and just leaf through. And like I said, I'd look to see, ooh, that one looks cool. And I, based on what was on the front, and then I'd read the back, and much the same way I used to buy books. And now that's all. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that goes by that I don't see because I just don't know that it's available.
In some ways, I almost feel like we're too informed. You know, like we know a synopsis of it, we know who's in it, we know, you know, the strengths and the weaknesses of a film, you know, if other people said they weren't going to watch it. But I think we took more risks back then,
mm-hmm.
you know, and end up watching something that maybe was something that we would never end up watching, but we got exposed to it because of, for whatever reason, the tagline was amazing, the artwork was amazing.
Yeah, I think an experience that people have now is if they encounter a really vivid piece of artwork or a title that's really evocative, they're going to take out their iPhone and look up the movie and read reviews about it.
Right.
And they're probably not going to be good reviews, and they're probably not going to read that movie. But I can definitely remember when I had no access to anything like that, a title and a piece of artwork is all I could go on, and it would work. So, I mean, I think that's really changed as well. There's less of a desire for people to explore a video store because they really want to be informed to make a specific choice, and they don't really want that mystery or that sense of discovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Carolee was saying with Twitter, it's a movie. People literally review movies as they're watching them in the theater now. So yeah, that, very much. It's instant, and now it can turn you off very quickly. I am actually kind of a fan of some of the bad movies, so I'll watch them even if the reviews are terrible. So
all of us feel the same.
Christopher, something that you might find kind of heartwarming, though, is, you know, as we've been working on this project, we've been visiting some of the remaining video stores, the mom and pop shops and the independent video stores that are still active.
Right.
And what is consistent among all of them, the reason that they're still thriving is because they do exactly what you're talking about. They try to expose people to new things, and they develop a rapport with the clientele that comes in, and they know what people like, and they import things or they order things specifically to cater to that audience. So it's that personal touch is what keeps those businesses alive, and the ones that are still there, that's why.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, and I keep going back to the analogy that goes along with the vinyl record. There is still vinyl record shops that are just small places, and they cater to a certain crowd. And I'm thinking the video store will turn in that same thing. Maybe there's only going to be one in the city or something, but they're going to know who comes in, they're going to know what they want, and people know that if where to go.
Yeah, and there's enough content out there on VHS alone that, I mean, let alone imports and other kind of specialty movie content, that once you have a rapport with a place, you just want to keep going back. Just like the place that, you know, I think of a record store that comes to mind, that they always had great hip-hop and soul music. And I would always show up there, and I'd always ask what they had, you know, that was new. The same thing with, you know, these rare VHS that are out there. I want to know what's out there that I can't get in any other format.
Is there a lot that is like that now? Do you see a lot of stuff that was available on VHS that just hasn't made the transformation over to the newer medias?
Yeah, literally tens of thousands of titles. It's an overwhelming glut of entertainment that you can only access that way.
Isn't it like 50 to 60% of things that were released on VHS have not and probably will not be released on any other format?
Yeah, the estimate is somewhere around 50%. And then, you know, now there's BitTorrenting and people hosting content and sharing it, but you're really dependent on somebody digitizing a tape and uploading it. And even as obscure as a lot of the sites get, there's still stuff missing. So, I mean, there's a huge amount of content that you can really only watch if you have a VCR.
And it's not because of the quality issues. I mean, there are some, we've run across some amazing movies that just haven't been released on another format, and it's not because they're bad. So I think some people, when they hear that stat, they think, well, it's just all the trash that didn't make it. But there are some definite gems in there that are not available anywhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of my favorite films are only available on VHS.
I don't know if I've run into that problem yet. I'm going to start thinking back of some of the movies that I remember watching on VHS and wondering, I'm going to start Googling, seeing if I can find them on DVD now. There may be many that are falling into that crack.
And I think a lot of it is the films that you didn't see before and that you haven't heard of. There's all of these kind of lost films that are ripe for rediscovery if somebody invests the time to find them. So, I mean, that's the exciting thing about VHS hunting at this point, is finding the things that never got their due.
Yeah, looking for the diamonds in the rough, yeah.
And there's something to be said about the trash, too. There is a definite trash out there, you know. And that stuff's enjoyable to watch. I mean, just because it's not the highest quality, just because it doesn't have blockbuster editing or big names, doesn't mean that it's not...
Or storyline, or
just viable plot points. Or it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean it's not incredibly entertaining and should be watched. And the likelihood of that stuff reaching a DVD market, especially now as things go more and more digital, seems pretty, you know, slim.
Well, I think my love for some of the bad films, a lot of it stems from the fact that, yes, like you said, there's, you know, bad editing, bad writing, bad acting, or whatever, but what you see is a group of people that worked hard in order to make this film. They didn't know they were making a bad movie. They were putting their all, at least you hope they were, into this film. And I think that is just, I don't know, I think it's special to watch. And by watching it, I feel like I'm... I guess kind of giving them a pat on the back and going, you know, good job.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand how extremely difficult it is to make a shitty movie. Like, it's really, really hard to make any movie. And if it gets completed and released out into the world, that's kind of a miracle. So, you know, I don't like to dump on those movies so much, because as terrible as they are, it's extremely difficult to even get that accomplished. So there's really something to be said for lending somebody some credibility and giving them a chance and watching some of, you know, the trash videos that are out there, because it meant everything to that person and they probably sacrificed a lot in their life just to get it completed.
Yeah, and I've seen big Hollywood films that just don't seem to have the heart or commitment from anybody involved, and you feel it. But when it comes to some of these other movies that maybe are not technically amazing as we traditionally think good movies are, you still see that love and that commitment, and it comes across.
Yeah, I'd rather see a bad actor putting his all into a film than seeing a quote-unquote movie star phone it in.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
But you can't fake passion. That comes through regardless.
Yeah, you often see a filmmaker that you were really excited about early in their career, and their later films seem sort of soulless and empty. And you can tell that they've started to just, you know, take the paycheck, or they're not hungry for it, or they're not angry like they were. And the results, you know, really bears that out. People who never get that success and continue striving to make films on their own terms, the results are often really inspiring because that passion really seeps into the celluloid. Do you feel with physical media going away that you still have a sense of ownership? Meaning, if you don't have an object in your home, do you feel like you own that movie even if you've paid for it and you technically have a copy?
No, I really don't. And that's one of the things that I've really resisted doing, the ordering it on iTunes or whatever, because it just doesn't feel like it's in my possession. No, like I was saying before, I like having something to put on the shelf.
Yeah, it's interesting to think that there's an entire generation that could not, you know, care less about that, that really is completely fine with not having an object, that their ideas of ownership of media is completely different than ours.
I'm also a little bothered by how people care to view the stuff. I mean, there is a lot of ways that you can put it onto your big HDTV, even if it is just on your computer, but a lot of people are just sitting with their iPads or iPods or these little screens on their laps, and I'm thinking that's not the right experience for me.
Yeah, I think you miss a lot that way. I mean, I don't want to be holier than thou and tell people how to watch their films, but I know I personally don't enjoy it on a tiny screen. I feel like I need to be overwhelmed by a movie. You know, I want to take up my whole display or as much as my vision can, you know. I don't want to see things in my periphery, and that includes an iPhone. So I try not to pull out my iPhone when I'm watching a movie. I try to give as much respect to it as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's interesting because we're on here talking about the impact and the importance of home video, which, of course, was a method of viewing films that, at least initially, 90% of the artists weren't intending. You know, we were actually watching what they would consider a compromised version. You know, they made these films to be seen in a theater.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's a generational shift. You know, we love watching films at home on home video, but we feel that we need to treat them with a certain amount of respect, and now we're seeing that shift. So I don't know, it's hard to say if there's anything wrong with the way people are watching stuff now, because I think a lot of people in a generation previous to us viewed watching in the home and watching on videotapes and DVDs as kind of a compromised way to see a film.
That's a good point.
Speaking of compromise, I think there's something, I don't know if it's nostalgic or what, but there's something I like about the VHS grain, that even if something is pan and scan and is not being displayed as it's traditionally supposed to be, depending on the genre, I think it sort of lends itself well. Like, particularly horror films, I feel like the added blur and the grain and the can't really, you know, the inability to see the super fine details of what's going on sort of make a slasher film that much more frightening.
When you don't have every single thread and nick of a blade visible, and it sort of lends more to leaving it to your imagination. And of course, as many people have said, your imagination can come up with things 10 times scarier than anything that they can actually create.
Right.
Is that sort of along the same lines? You think maybe with the VHS, it's more is hidden or less is more?
Absolutely. I mean, if you can't see what's in the shadows, it's that much more scary than seeing, you know, the fine gradations of gray where you know exactly what's there.
Yeah, there are films that I watched on VHS as a kid, and I was really impressed by certain special effects. And then seeing them as an adult, either on 35mm or on a newer format where the image has been remastered, the effects weren't as convincing as I thought they were. The VHS actually kind of blurred certain things and made the effects seem more realistic. So watching it the way the artist intended actually lessened the impact of that moment for me.
Now that is something right there when you talk about the effects. The effects of the day when the VHS, you know, going to the 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, certainly wasn't up to the standards that they are today. And so, yeah, the digital transfer to DVD or Blu-ray, you can actually take what was considered a good movie, you know, 20 years ago, and what it looks like what you would consider a bad movie today, because you can see the wires, you can see where they cartooned in the explosion or whatever a lot more than you could watching it on your old tube television with your VCR.
Although in some ways I'd say like the sort of latex and practical effects that they were forced to use, mm-hmm. that was just the effects of the day, are sort of more timeless. To me, in my eye, I see CGI blood and I think it looks bad now, and you give it a couple of years and it just looks terrible and unwatchable.
Right.
But you see some of this Karo syrup and some of this latex and goo stuff from that was just typical of movies that came out in the 80s, and it still looks good today.
I've been really impressed when you watch an older film where there was all practical effects, very little of any CGI. So if you're talking like a science fiction film or something where the ships are all model work and everything, and that still carries through even on DVD. You look at it and you're going, that looks good. You know, there is something about having the physical practical effect I think does last longer, whereas CGI ages rapidly.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing about practical effects is that even if it looks fairly fake, it's still something real. It's an object that's being actually photographed in camera, whereas CGI, no matter how photorealistic it looks, your brain automatically processes the fact that it's not physically present.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes even something looking fake still feels more real because you know it's really there.
Someone else, when I was telling them that I was going to talk to you about this, about the VHS and then now the DVD, he was talking about the linear experience of tape versus the what he considered the random experience as a DVD. In fact, when you put that tape in, you have to start at the beginning and you have to go all the way through, you know, through all the previews they put on the front. And unless you sit there and fast forward through them, and even when you do, you still have to watch them. And now you can just, in many cases, jump right to the feature film, miss all the previews. You don't have to watch the special features, you know, to get to the end of the DVD. And that's another way that it just really changed how we watch things now.
Or you can't fast forward through the federal warning at the beginning.
That's true. That's true. Gotta watch that. You used to be able to, that's right. There you go. The advantage to VHS, you could fast forward through the federal warning.
I was actually thinking about that the other day. We're having a party with some friends in which everyone's bringing videos of themselves from like junior high, high school. Most of them, for a lot of us, would be on VHS.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have something from a 7th and 8th grade plays that I was in that my dad had actually put it on DVD. And I was thinking about taking it to the party that I'm going to have to actually go through, watch it, find at what time it happens, remember that number to tell everyone, then we have to kind of, you know, scuttle through to get to that number rather than just putting the tape in, finding it, pausing it. Then when I take it to the friend's house, we just hit play. Like, it's actually kind of more of a pain in the ass, though.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, you could. You could stop it and then pick it up right where you left off on the tape.
Yeah, that's definitely something we're talking about in depth, though, is kind of the social aspect of that. You could see if someone turned in something and didn't rewind it, where they stopped, where they left off. You can get a hint when there's something really good about to come on because the tape's probably going to be worn out a bit.
Yeah, you know, when a friend would loan you a videotape of a movie that you wanted to see that they had taped off cable, you would watch that movie and it would come to an end, and then you would see like a glitch on the screen and it would go back to whatever they had recorded prior to that, you know, because you could record over things over and over.
Right.
So you would borrow Total Recall from your friend and watch that movie, and then after that was over, you would suddenly realize that your friend for a period of time was recording every single music video off of MTV because you would just slowly watch a barrage of them, and then it might become a TV show, like they would have several episodes of Perfect Strangers on there. So you could actually get insight into people's tastes over time almost by pure accident because they were documenting things and not even thinking about that when they would pass the tape over to you.
Neat. That's a neat view. It's actually a little bit of our history was recorded, you know, little bits at a time on these things, and now that's gone. That just doesn't exist anymore.
I always enjoyed seeing where people left off when I rented a movie or got, you know, borrowed a VHS from somebody. And it was either the point where they gave up or possibly I liked reading into it. You know, maybe it was the scene that they were obsessing about. And so I'd always read into the significance of a tape that sort of was left off in the middle.
It's actually, I'd never really thought of it before. And now that you mention it, I think, wow, that's really possibly true. That's interesting, and now I can't even experiment with it.
Yeah, there were a myriad of, you know, ways that you could leave a personal fingerprint on a VHS tape, and that's missing from non-cassette culture. You could also, if you rewound and watched something over and over, whether it was a piece of gore or a nude scene or whatever, it would leave an impact on the tape. You would kind of see this glitch occur where you could tell that that had been worn and rewatched over and over. So you could kind of leave your mark on something in a way that you can't now.
Well, you can leave a DVD out and get it scratched and it's unplayable.
But you can't get any insight into that person other than that they're...
irresponsible.
Yeah.
Is there any sort of... I mean, you guys are still working on it. You said you're going to try to get to Japan to do some more filming and everything, but is there... we hope it's done by date, or is it pretty much just when you're done, it'll be done?
The last trip, where Japan is going to be the last 2 weeks of May, and that's our last filming. So we'll be done at that point with filming. We are already editing. We hope to have everything completed so that we can start submitting to the 2013 film festival circuit.
Oh, fantastic. And I got to ask this, though. Are you going to put out like a special edition on VHS?
Hopefully. I mean, we've already looked into doing that. It really depends on, you know, if, you know, if you sign with the distributor, then they have certain, you know, requirements. So it's hard to speculate at this point because we don't know what the release strategy will be, but it is possible to do that. And if it's our decision, we definitely want to do that.
Tell you, before we go, tell us where people can find more information about this.
Our website is rewindthismovie.com, and we're also on Twitter at rewindthismovie.
Well, Josh, Carolee, Christopher, thank you very much for talking to me about this.
Thank you. Great.
Yeah, thanks.
Good luck in Japan, and good luck with the rest of the, you know, the final steps. And I can't wait to finally see the finished product.
Neither can we.
Yeah. We'll keep you posted.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.